But what I want to look at is you have the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And you can't hold one any higher above the other. Because without the death, you don't have the burial, nor do you have the resurrection. And if you just have the resurrection and no death, that's, you know, you can't have one without the other. It's just like if you're just trying to relay the importance of Christopher Columbus or George Washington. Without either one of the men, you still wouldn't have America. I mean, if Christopher Columbus hadn't came and discovered it, somebody eventually would have, but it wouldn't have came out in the exact same way. Without George Washington, we'd lost everything that we had, and it all went back to the British. So, in looking at the importance of the death, burial, and the resurrection, the three combined, you can't hold one above the other, but the three combined, what they produce is what's important. Just like what George Washington and Christopher Columbus produced is what's important. And that's the same thing with the death, burial, and the resurrection. It's not what the ideas of the cross, the burial, and the resurrection, they're each individually important, but what was achieved by the death, what was achieved by the burial, and what was achieved by the resurrection, all combined, is the most important part. The product. The product. But only through the ministry of Paul do we see the distinct importance of the result of the death, burial, and resurrection. Does that make sense? That's really hard to get out. But through the study of right division and through the ministry that God gave to Paul, do we understand the importance of the death, the burial, and the resurrection? And what that produced. What that had the ability to come upon individuals like me and you through the instrument of the death, burial, and the resurrection. Only through Paul do you see, and that's why in Ephesians 3, he calls it the unsearchable riches of Christ. He says, "Unto me who am less than least of all the saints is this grace given that I should preach among the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ." I skipped a few verses in there in between that. But you see my point. That's what Paul, whenever he's preaching, that's what he's doing. He's preaching the importance, this we call the mystery, of what happened on them three different things. I wanted to lay that down before we read this in 2 Corinthians 4. In 2 Corinthians 4, we'll start in verse 1. "Therefore, seeing we have this ministry, as we receive mercy, we faint not, but have renounced the hidden things of dishonesty, not walking in craftiness, nor handling the word of God deceitfully, but by manifestation of the truth, commending ourselves to every man's conscience in the sight of God. But if our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are lost, in whom the God of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them." That last verse I read, verse 4. Let's look at it one more time. "In whom..." Well, let's start in verse 3. "But if our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are lost. In whom the God of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not." This God of this world has blinded some people. And he says, which believe not. But it says the word lest. Lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ should shine unto them. What is the light of the glorious gospel of Christ? What is that light? And what I want you to see what that light is the things that were accomplished in the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Christ. That's what the light is. The things that were accomplished. Not the individual circumstances themselves, but what was accomplished through that. Let's look at verse 6. "For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, has shined in our hearts." He's talking to saved people here. "For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, has shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." That's what this light, these people that were blinded, did not have. They did not have the knowledge of the glory of God. They didn't have the knowledge or the information that what was accomplished by the cross. This is what they could not see. This is what they could not trust in. This is what they could not believe. And this is why the God of this world had them blinded. This light couldn't shine unto them. When we're talking about this light, you hear it in children's songs. The song, "This Little Light of Mine, I'm going to Let It Shine." And you think about that song. What is it really talking about? This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. It's talking about His works. Your works. That's what it's talking about. And don't get the light that we're supposed to be portraying and shining to the lost world as the same light that the nation of Israel was shining and portraying to the lost world. I'll show you the difference. Matthew chapter 5, and we'll look at verse 14. This is Jesus talking. This is a Sermon on the Mount. He's talking to the nation of Israel. "Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid." Who's a city? Jerusalem's a city. What the nation of Israel was supposed to do was to... The nation of Israel was going to rise up, and all the people was going to see the nation of Israel and the glory that God had given to them, and they was going to flock into it. That's why He says a city. He says, "You're the light of the world. Ye, the nation of Israel, are the light of the world." This is what He's saying. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. And what He's... The light that they're portraying is the law. They was to do the law. And this law, when they did it correctly and they did it right, and it's clear that's what it's talking about. Look at verse 16. "Let your light so shine before men." Before who? We're supposed to take this light of the glorious gospel of Christ and shine it unto people that the God of this world is blinding, and we're supposed to do it before men, right? Verse 16. "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." This is what the light that they were shining. This is what they were doing. But the light that we're supposed to shine is the knowledge of the glory of God. That's what we're supposed to be shining. There's nothing wrong with good works. Don't get me wrong. But I wanted to show you that comparison to the light that they were shining. They didn't have the understanding. They didn't have the mystery revealed to the Apostle Paul in this chapter. So they couldn't give you complete understanding in the death, burial, and the resurrection of Christ and all of it that it accomplished, could they? So all that they were showing at this time, the light that they were shining before lost people, was their good works. The law program. That's what they were doing. There's nothing wrong, though, with good works. We got... That is, in Philippians it says, "So shine ye as lights in the world." And Ephesians says to walk ye as children of light. There's nothing wrong with good works. I'm not saying that. But what we are supposed to portray, what we are supposed to relay to individuals is not our good works. And that's what, you know, it says in 2 Corinthians 4, verse 3, "In whom the God of this world hath blinded the minds of them." And how He's blinded them is the religion, that in their religious practices. That's what they have got so caught up. And if I hadn't done those two comparisons about the light, a lot of times we would have got caught up thinking that the light was our good works. But these people, the God of this world has blinded them because they're looking at their works. And they can't see any further past that. They're looking at their law and their religion, and it's covered up their eyes. That's what's happened here. That's what the God of this world has done. He has took out the light of the glorious gospel of Christ and the accomplishments of the cross and put in people's good works. And that's what they're trying to portray. There's no doubt that you go to anywhere, any church you want to, they couldn't give you five verses about the death, burial, and the resurrection of Christ. And that what they'll say is, "The only thing I got is, you know, my testimony. I just try to live good in front of people." But they're blinded. That's not the point. That's not the point. 2 Corinthians 4, starting verse 6. Verse 6 says, "For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, hath shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." God commanded this light to shine out of darkness, just like He did in Genesis 1. The universe, uni, means single, and verse means single spoken sentence. It was spoken. It just happened. And that's what God had given this revelation to the Apostle Paul. And then that's why he says, "Be ye followers of me, even as I am of Christ." He understood some things about the cross that we're supposed to know, that we're supposed to relay. It says, "God commanded this light to shine out of darkness, has shined in our hearts to give the light." The reason it's in our hearts, and the reason that we understand it and we try to study it, is to give it away. Is that not right? That's why, you know, that's why we should. We should study to show ourselves approved unto God. And to do that, we give it away. That's what we do. But what I want to show you, this light is not good works. It's not anything physical that we can do ourselves. Look at the last part of that verse. To give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ, verse 7, "But we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us." If we have good works, who's the glory on? It's on us. Because Jesus told the nation of Israel, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works." There's a big difference. But we have this treasure in earthen vessels. We have this knowledge that we take in. And we understand some things about the accomplishments of the cross. And that's what we relay to people. And that's what takes the veil off of their eyes. That's the only way that they'll understand it. But if you have a... And just to kind of explain a little more, that it's not our good works that people's looking at. He says, "We have this treasure in earthen vessels." And he compares it to a light. If you take a light flashlight and shine it in your hands and then go, it don't work, does it? You can't re-shine the light. It's only the source of the light that you can see. You can shine the flashlight in people's eyes, but you can't shine it in your hand and then turn the flashlight out and the light come out. You can't save it. It's only the source of that light. And the source of the light that we have is the knowledge of the accomplishments of the cross. I'm just kind of trying to lay that out. Okay, so saying that, the light of the glorious gospel of Christ is those accomplishments. But I'm going to go over some accomplishments, and I'm going to do it by looking at two individuals. We're going to look at Joseph and Jesus Christ. And we're going to look at some comparisons. I'm not even going to go through all the verses, because Joseph and Jesus are normally, most people understand who these guys are, and most people know some facts about these guys and the stories in the Bible about these guys. I'm going to look at some comparisons and show you the similarities between the two, between Joseph and Jesus Christ. Joseph was a guy that his father loved. Jesus, whenever he was baptized, he came out and there's a voice from heaven says, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." So both of them, their father loved them. Both of these guys were plotted against. Joseph's brother said, here he comes. Let's come up with a plan to overtake him. They came up with a plan. Jesus was plotted against. Both of these guys were taken to Egypt. Joseph was cast, put into the well, and then he was sold to the Philistines and he was taken to Egypt. Jesus, whenever he was a baby, they took him to Egypt to flee from Herod so that the Scripture might be fulfilled. It says, "Out of Egypt have I called my son." Both of these guys were taken to Egypt. Both of these guys had their robes taken. Joseph, whenever he was thrown into a pit, they took the coat off of him, slew an animal, put some blood on it, and took it to his father. Jesus, right before he went on to the cross, they said, "Let's cast lots for his clothes." Both of these gentlemen were sold as about the price of a slave. Joseph was sold for 20 pieces of silver, and Jesus was sold for 30. Real cheap. Both of these gentlemen were tempted. Joseph was tempted by Potiphar's wife. Jesus was tempted by the devil for 40 days. They were both 30 years old when they began their ministry. Joseph's ministry was after the Pharaoh had a dream and he went into the temple or the palace and set up. He was like second in command. Jesus was 30 years old whenever he began his earthly ministry to the nation of Israel. Both of these guys, whenever they were condemned, were with two prisoners. Joseph was with the baker and the butler. Jesus was with the two thieves on the cross. Both of these prisoners, one just happened to be saved and the other one happened to be lost. Same in Jesus' case. One of each. Both of these guys claimed to be the Savior of their nation. And they both were. But the last one I want to look at, and we're going to read it, Genesis chapter 37, in verse 3. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. Joseph had this coat of many colors, and he said it was given to him because Joseph's father loved him above his brethren. And this coat wasn't just that it was a pretty jacket. It wasn't an Armani or a Gucci jacket that made it important. It was the fact that it represented something. It represented authority. When the father, it's just like the father give it all to Joseph right there. And I'll show you that. And you have actually a cross-reference in your Bible on that verse that's probably going to say that this coat was an emblem of royalty or position. That's what this coat represented. It's just like it crowned him. Right here. That's what this coat represented. It wasn't just pretty. But he gave him a coat of many colors. And verse 4 says, and when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. They recognized Joseph's authority over them by the acceptance of this coat. This wasn't just a good story. This was a very important part. This coat was very important. That's why whenever they threw Joseph into the well, they took this coat back to their father. It's the only way that he would truly believe him. He couldn't take his socks. Could have been anybody's socks, but this coat was the coat. But Joseph had, with all the similarities between Joseph and Jesus Christ, Joseph had a coat of many colors. And I can't think of any instance where when Jesus is walking in His earthly ministry that He had this coat. But let's look at Revelation 21. Revelation 21, and we'll look at verse 23. The city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb was the light thereof. What I wanted you to see here, that these two things are synonymous. The glory of God, the three things, the light that shined in this city, and Jesus Christ being the Lamb. Those three things are the same thing. Do you see that in that verse? Okay. So, Jesus Christ is the light of this city. He is the glory of God. And there's an interesting thing about light. It's a strange phenomenon. Whenever light is shining through a prism or it's refracted, it comes out with colors, does it not? You have violet, indigo, blue, green, yellow, orange, and red. This is the colors of the spectrum of the rainbow that we see. These are the colors. This is the visible spectrum. This is what you see. This is all the colors really that there is, and every other color is a combination of these colors. That's how we get this. So, and we'll look at to explain this a little better, turn to Ezekiel chapter 1. Ezekiel chapter 1, and we'll look in verse 27. And I saw, Ezekiel here is getting a vision of the glory of God. This is all this vision is in Ezekiel chapter 1, is a vision of the glory of God. It's not aliens or all the different people's theories about Ezekiel chapter 1. This is the glory of God, what he's looking at. And I saw as the color of amber, as the appearance of fire round about within it, from the appearance of his loins even upward, and from the appearance of his loins even downward, I saw as it were the appearance of fire, and it had brightness round about. And as the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud in the day of rain, so is the appearance of the brightness round about. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And when I saw it, I fell upon my face and heard a voice of one that spake. So, when it talked about in Revelations that these three are the same, the glory of God, the light of that city, and Jesus Christ being the Lamb, are the same. And whenever Ezekiel's looking at it, he says, he sees the glory of God, which could be all three, but he goes into a little bit more detail and explains about the glorious light. Does he not? What does he say it looked like? A rainbow, a bow that is set in a cloud in the day of rain. So whenever Jesus Christ is clothed and he shines light, what does he have on? A coat of many colors. And that's what he has, and that's what he gained through the accomplishments of the cross. All three of those things, all those accomplishments, what he got was this clothed in light. That's what he got. And that whenever he goes to the Transfiguration in Matthew 15, I may be way off, I hate to. But in Matthew, whenever he goes to Transfiguration, it says his garment was white. And the only way that you can have truly pure white light is to have a combination of all these colors. And that's what it represented at the Transfiguration, was this is a figure likened to what he's going to be. And this accomplishments of the cross is how he gained this. And this is just a small part of the, you know, whenever we talk about the light of the glorious gospel that we're supposed to portray, this is what he gained at the cross, and what we gained by trusting in him is what we're supposed to portray. That's what people can trust in. That's what we're supposed to shine to a lost and dying world. But I hope you see that about the glory of God is the light. And the light is the Lamb, and the Lamb is the glory of God. If they're all synonymous. But you can take this color thing. Wave, there's some dispute about light waves. They call them waves. Some people call them pulses of light. They really don't know, to be honest with you. But the best I can understand it, the violet end of the spectrum is in real short waves. And the red end of the spectrum is real long. You see that? Okay, so sometimes this is inverted whenever you look at it. Sometimes red, you know, sometimes it depends on how it's refracted. But this is the, let's say, Jesus Christ in Revelations, and I'm just throwing this out. Whenever he's in Revelations, he says, I am the first and the last. These colors will never be in any other order. I am the first and the last, the Alpha and Omega. This is the short. This is the long. And if you think about whenever he's clothed in his brightness, whenever he's clothed in his brightness, he has all the colors, don't he? Okay, if you think about when the cross was put into action, I should say. And that was right before he was nailed to the cross, wasn't it? What color was his robe? He says, I am the first. It was purple, wasn't it? He says, I am the first and the last. Whenever, right before the accomplishments of the cross, here he's in a purple robe. Right whenever he comes back in Revelations, what color is his outfit then? It's a little red, isn't it? See, he takes all those You know, it may not have anything to do with that. I think it's interesting, though, why did they choose purple? Why didn't he come back in gray? I think those are interesting, but what's even further than that? You take, we say that we preach the mystery, don't we? The mystery. Was there some things about that cross that Satan didn't understand? There's some ends of this spectrum over here that's called ultraviolet. There's some invisible parts of the ultraviolet spectrum, and they are the most dangerous. What hurt Satan the most was the part of this spectrum that he didn't see. You see that? And that's what this glorious gospel of Christ, right here, there were some things about this purple robe that just burnt Satan's eye. That's why we get sunburns of ultraviolet light. It may not have anything to do with it. But I think it's interesting. Why? There's seven. I mean, that's perfect. I think it's not by coincidence. And it's whenever you think about the rainbow that's in the sky, and he says that he set the bow in the sky that he would no more flood the world. That's why he did it. And whenever he's clothed, whenever he gets this glory of the accomplishments of the cross, and whenever we put our trust in what he did on that cross, we are accepted in him. A lot of times whenever it's real cold, you know, I get Braden out of the car seat. She says, "Oh, I'm cold. So I would take my coat and I would wrap her around it. Or wrap her up in it. Her feet might be hanging on that. That's the way I like to look at the light of the glorious gospel of Christ. Is that's where we should feel like we're sitting. Jesus Christ has taken this coat of many colors and wrapping us in it. He has protected. That's why Paul uses the word accepted in the beloved. We're only accepted because he's got the coat on. If he didn't have it on, it would be worthless. And there's no wonder that Satan. It says that Satan has transformed himself into an angel of light. He wants to be Satan. He wants to be Jesus Christ's counterfeit. Why better way to do it than to portray light? And the last verse I want to look at is, well, we don't even have to look there, but Romans 13 verse 12 says, "For us to cast off the works of darkness and put on the armor of light." The only way that we are going to take this glorious gospel of Christ. You know, like I said, you couldn't take a flashlight, shine it in a box or in your hand, and then portray it. The only way that we're going to portray it, that this light of the glorious gospel of Christ is going to shine unto other men, is to put on this armor of light. And to rest, and to have full assurance that just as I was walking Braden up on the porch in my coat, and I was wrapping her and trying to protect her from the elements of the world, we should have that same assurance that that's what Jesus Christ does to us. And that's what we should have, and that's what we should rest in, and that's what we should portray.